It's Monday. It's a Monday morning, which means we discuss the box office, go through the numbers, and review the new movies with Colin Suter and Eric Childress, who join me every Monday morning. And coming up later on, my dad tells a joke. It's a jokey, jokey, jokey time. And by the way, tomorrow night, I am hosting a screening of Jaws. You know, it's a pretty good movie. It's not bad. So as a salute to that, we are going to be doing a topic a little bit later on called the Man versus Beast genre, which we'll get to in a little bit. But let's welcome Colin. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. And Eric Childress. Hi, Eric.
I'm here, too.
All right. We are here to talk movies and the box office and all kinds of cool stuff. And there we go. Okay. So the big movie of the week, obviously, as we look at the box office, is San Andreas. But is 53, I mean, I know 53 million is a lot of money, but did it underperform, or did you think it was going to make more than that?
No, this has actually overperformed a lot of people's expectations.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I figured this thing probably like mid to low 40s, actually, but there were a lot of the quote-unquote analysts and experts were chalking this up to like high 20s, maybe even low 30s, and not even thinking maybe even 100 million total for this one, which seemed a little light. My expectations were a little bit light in comparison, but they're much higher than that.
Well, The Rock is in movies that make money.
Yeah, even if you don't count the Fast and Furious movies.
Yeah.
You remember like a couple years ago when, Dwayne Johnson, comes out of the box and looks like he's going to be sort of like the heir apparent to Arnold Schwarzenegger for a while. And then his films don't do as great as expected after the Scorpion King and The Mummy Returns and all that kind of stuff. But then all of a sudden he just starts getting added to sequels. He's in the Journey to the Mysterious Island. He's in the G.I. Joe. He's in then he joins Fast Five. And all of a sudden, as he said on Saturday Night Live and was said at CinemaCon years ago, he was referred to himself as Franchise Viagra. This is the highest opening he's had, though, as the star of the movie.
Right. Not a sequel. Just his.
Right.
It's his vehicle.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. All right. So that came in at number one with 53.2 million. Pitch Perfect 2 comes in second with 14.8 million, bringing its total up to 147.5 million. Now, has that outgrossed the first one?
Oh, by far. It's over doubled what the first one made.
No, really?
Oh, almost 2.5 times what the first one made.
Wow,
first one only made 60 some million.
Really? Because the first one's so much better.
Yeah. Yeah, but it took a little while for people to discover that, unfortunately. It was sort of a little bit of a word-of-mouth hit in October of the year that it opened. And so this one, everyone was waiting for it, and, it's not as good. But that doesn't stop people from going to see it.
Yeah. Well, I understand that.
Yeah.
Tomorrowland comes in at number three. This has got to be considered a bomb, right?
I mean, yeah, this right now looks to be the bomb of the summer. And it's becoming sort of a yearly tradition for Disney live action films. I mean, you had Lone Ranger, you had John Carter, a couple others. And yeah, this thing is tanking like nobody imagined. I mean, when you have a $190 million film, your expectations, might be a little shaky for that it's going to recoup that amount, but people thought it was going to do a lot better than this, and part of the reason for that is that the reviews really kind of killed this thing well before it had a chance to gain any chance of momentum, and the opening weekend on Memorial Day was a very slight Memorial Day weekend, and the drop this week is really hefty. This thing might not make $100 million in the U.S.
It's amazing. It's unbelievable. It's a George Clooney Disney movie with special effects directed by Brad Bird. I mean, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Colin, were you going to say something?
I was just going to say, do you think it's also the advertising for the film? A lot of people just don't know what to make of it when they look at it.
Yeah, that's really an excellent point. I mean, when you have a film that you don't have the name recognition to it, especially a big summer vehicle like that, and people don't really know what it's about, you better have either strong word of mouth or particularly really good reviews out of the gate. You know, like, not a lot of movies can pull off something like this. I mean, Inception is one of those rare movies where people are like, what the hell is this about? And then all of a sudden, everyone loves it, and then the word of mouth builds and people go see it. But people didn't know what this thing was, and then the critics told them it sucked, and they stayed away.
Wow.
And okay. By the way, it doesn't suck.
No, it doesn't suck.
No, it doesn't suck. It
doesn't suck at all. Actually, it's a good movie. <It's> like, yeah. All right, well, here we go. Number four. Come on, baby. Mad Max Fury Road. I'm up to four viewings.
Ah.
13.6 million, 115.9 total. What are we talking there? Is that success? Is it solid?
Not quite. It's solid. It's solid, and obviously word of mouth is keeping it up there, and I think you might still see it, maybe pull another 10 million next week, maybe. But it's solid numbers. We still need the overseas numbers to really kick in to make this thing a success, because it's not going to make up all that money here in the U.S. So it really, all the Australians need to come out for this thing.
No, they will.
And all the people in China who spent 380 some million on Fast and Furious 7.
Well, here's the thing, and we'll review. We're going to review San Andreas, and we're going to review Aloha. Those are the two big ones that came out this week. Here's the thing about San Andreas. We'll get into the actual review of it in a little bit. I actually kind of enjoyed it. I thought it was kind of fun. I thought the effects were great. But I got to say that if I go see these big action movies with the CGI, I'm like, why? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
after seeing Mad Max, it's like, what the hell, man? I mean, you can do a really hugely kick-ass action movie without all this crap.
Yeah, I know that, people who do venture out to see Mad Max are spreading the word. I hear people, on radio, on television, people who just casually mention it and then say, oh, you have to see it.
Yeah.
And so that is happening, but you have to wonder about all the people who still haven't gone to see it. And like, what are you doing going to see San Andreas if you haven't seen Mad Max?
Yeah, because it's the real deal, man.
Yeah.
I mean, I think San Andreas is fine. It's your big budget, special effects action movie, and that's fine. But I think I'm ruined, man. honest to God,
yeah.
I think I really, after Fury Road, I think I'm ruined. I don't.
Well, it was a good 30 years, Nick.
All right, so number four, Mad Max Fury Road, best film of 2015. Number five, speaking of CGI, The Avengers Age of Ultron, 10.9 million. And that's making, you said, a lot less than the first one?
Oh, yeah. About 200 million less right now than the first one.
Whoa.
And yet still is the sixth highest grossing film of all time.
Oh, man.
So, disappointment in some respect, yet still, one of the rare films to actually break 400 million here in the U.S.
Yeah.
And like I said, sixth highest grossing film of all time.
Unbelievable.
So there you go.
Unbelievable. Number six, Aloha, $10 million, which is Cameron Crowe's latest movie. Did anybody expect it to make, what did you predict?
Earlier in the summer, I had it sort of like 13, 14 million,
yeah.
I was guessing. And, it opened better than We Bought a Zoo. But We Bought a Zoo actually did much, much better. or will do, and end up doing much, much better.
Okay. Number seven, Poltergeist, 7.8 million, bringing its total up to 38. How many weeks has that been out? What, 3 weeks?
This is the second week.
Second week?
Thing dropped 66%.
Wow. Well, it's because it's crap.
It's crap. It's horror, which drops huge already, and crap horror drops even more.
Okay. Far From Maddening Crowd, 1.4 million. Hot Pursuit. By the way, do either of you guys remember the John Cusack movie, Hot Pursuit?
Of course, Robert Loggia. Ben Stiller.
Robert Loggia, that's right.
Ben Stiller's in that.
Yes, he is.
The bad guy.
Yeah. I totally forgot. Robert Loggia rules in that movie.
Rules? Rules?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, Robert Loggia just kind of rules in general, so I'll give you that.
Well, he rules in he rules so much, he rules in those orange juice commercials. Remember the orange juice commercials?
No.
You don't?
No.
Colin, do you?
That? Oh, yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
Where there's a kid, there's a kid at the breakfast table, he's like 7 years old, and he won't drink his orange juice. And the parents are like, you drink your orange juice. And he's like, I don't want to. And he's like, who would make you drink your orange juice? And the kid says, I don't know, Robert Loggia.
Really?
Then, I'm not kidding. And then Robert Loggia walks in.
I've never seen these commercials.
And goes, Bobby, you gotta drink your orange juice.
And does he swear at him?
No. And then he goes, okay, Robert Loggia, and he drinks the orange juice. I'm not kidding. You got to see this, man.
I've never seen these commercials. Ever.
Oh, my God. Oh, Colin, man. Tell him.
Yeah, they're really funny. I mean, it's almost like Seth MacFarlane directed an orange juice commercial.
It's just like,
throw something in there.
This was like the mid-90s.
Okay.
It was like mid-90s. I'm sitting on the couch. And I'm with my ex-wife, and I'm my first ex-wife, and we're watching it, and the commercial comes up, and I'm like, "Did that just happen? What? What the hell was that?" I think we have. All right, here's the deal. We're gonna take a break, and we'll come back, Eric. We're gonna play the audio for you.
Oh, okay.
All right. By the way, Home came in at number 10. With $1.1 million, bringing up to $170 million. Okay, we got more analysis of the box office, and then we'll review the new movies right here on 720 WGN. Nick DiGilio here. How you doing, everybody? We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 a.m. And then we'll hang out for a little bit afterwards. It's Monday morning. That means my dad! Jokey, jokey, jokey time. Monday also means that it's time for Colin and Eric and I to review the new movies, Colin Suter and Eric Childress, and go down the box office, which is what we're doing right now. Now, before the break, Colin and I were shocked to discover that Eric had never seen the... I don't even know what brand of... Is it Tropicana, Colin?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I believe that's what it was.
It's Minute Maid.
Oh, it's okay.
Okay, it's Minute Maid. So here, that Eric had never seen the classic mid-90s commercial where the kid is like 7 and he won't drink his orange juice, and his parents say, "Hey, who could make you drink your orange juice?" And he goes, "I don't know, Robert Loggia." And then Robert Loggia shows up.
What kid doesn't want to drink orange juice, though?
I don't know.
He's a weird child.
Clearly he's weird because the first person that comes out of his mouth, he's 7, is Robert Loggia.
Like, if this was grapefruit juice or, you know, something of that ilk, I could understand it.
Yeah. Well, all right. Well, so you've never seen it.
No.
But we do have the audio. DJ Shagru?
Try some new Minute Maid orange tangerine. It's got calcium.
Then I'm not drinking it.
Oh, no, it's sweet. You'll like it.
I don't believe you.
Well, then who would you believe?
I don't know, Robert Loggia. Whoa, Robert Loggia.
Billy, your mother's right. New Minute Maid orange tangerine tastes great. It's got as much calcium as milk.
If you say so, Mr. Loggia.
Yeah.
This is great.
Enjoy your breakfast.
New Minute Maid Orange Tangerine with calcium.
Yeah.
The greatest commercial. I mean, how is that not the greatest thing ever?
I wondered if Robert Loggia like misses the theme music everywhere he enters. I mean, it sounds like a private eye. Does he come in with like a private eye hat? And,
no, he's got like a white suit on, right?
What is it? All black.
All black suit. Okay, really? All black suit. He just comes right through the kitchen door. Right?
And it comes right through the kitchen door. We'll post it on our Facebook page. But it's fantastic because, like, the kid says Robert Loggia, and then the mom just has this big grin. Like, she's just waiting for Robert Loggia's been standing outside her door for years waiting for this moment. And then he strolls in.
Hey, Bobby.
Anyone with Robert Loggia, that'd probably be a very disturbing commercial.
Oh, man. It's hilarious. Absolutely. Now, was this a series of them, or I think it was just that one, right?
I'm only finding one online.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Could you even do that commercial today? I mean, we're talking about an old man who's waiting outside to tell a kid to drink his orange juice.
Well, you know, one of my favorite creepy commercials.
Hey, Billy.
Drink your orange juice.
Yeah, come out with Uncle Robert.
Outside hanging out with the Burger King.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that was just going to say. The Burger King is the other one. My favorite of all the creepy Burger King commercials, and I love them all. My favorite is the one where the Burger King, where the guy's standing by the back door and he looks out the window in his backyard, and the Burger King is like 50 feet away. And then, like, he turns away or something, the dog barks, he looks back, and the Burger King is right at the door.
Yeah.
The magical power of the Burger King and Robert Loggia.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay. All right, so there's your top 10. San Andreas overperformed. You know, I don't know, man. I thought it was going to make more than 53 mil. I don't know why.
I don't know. People were sort of, you know, gauging that people were maybe sort of tired of the disaster thing. Not like we haven't really had one in a while of this sort of ilk, but... You know, just like, you know, like The Rock's drawing power is good, but, you know, not overwhelming. But I don't know. I don't know why people thought it was going to be that low.
Okay. All right. And I mean, this is a disaster movie of biblical proportions.
Yes. Yes.
All right. We'll get into that in a couple of minutes. All right. This kind of weekend, the very end of May. Eric, what are some of the lessons learned? What are some of the big movies that have come out during these times?
Oh boy, I don't have that list in front of me, but you know, the post Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah.
Depending on when Memorial Day falls, obviously, sometimes you know this ends up being like an early June weekend. It's a weekend that a lot of films usually avoid. Because like the post Memorial Day weekend, you know, people have usually come out and seen a bunch of movies over Memorial Day, and they don't double down on the next weekend because
right.
There's usually something even bigger coming out the following week.
And they release and Memorial Day, I mean, massive movies get released on Memorial Day.
Yeah, but that's also changed as well because now you get that kickoff of the Memorial Day used to be basically the launch of summer. So that used to be the time when
April.
It's April and it's April and Fast Furious 7.
Yeah.
But now I mean even May 1st is sort of that first weekend of May is the one that everyone shoots for, and then everything that comes in through May, you try to get something big on Memorial Day. Obviously, it didn't really register this year. I think that's probably another reason why people thought that the grosses were probably going to be down in San Andreas, just because of, just traditionally it's a sort of a lesser weekend.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers for this weekend and last weekend are very down from, I guess, last year. I think it's, because the new movies have more or less have disappointed. I mean, Tomorrowland didn't open that well last week. Poltergeist, started strong, but then declined throughout the weekend. And so people have just been sort of doubling down on Pitch Perfect 2 and Mad Max and whatnot. And they've just been, those movies clearly haven't died out yet. But the newer ones are dying out very quickly.
Pitch Perfect 2, I think, is your success story, don't you think, on the list?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, you know, Avengers is what we, you know, we expected that to be, but Pitch Perfect 2 is the only other moneymaker this summer so far. Mad Max has the sort of the best word of mouth numbers at the moment, but yeah. Pitch Perfect 2 and Avengers are the only films right now to post a profit versus their budget for the studios.
Okay, all right. All right, well, we're going to get into the movies. And by the way, I just want to mention, are you guys coming to Jaws? You're coming to Jaws, right?
Are you kidding?
And Colin, are you coming?
Most likely.
Okay. All right. So I just want to mention that I am screening on the big screen, digitally remastered, 40th anniversary of Jaws on the big screen tomorrow night. At the Movico Theater in Rosemont. Starts at 8 o'clock. We'll meet at 7. It's only $10 to get in. Parking is free. You can have cocktails. We'll meet at 7 o'clock at Bogart's on the second floor of the movie theater. Eric, have you ever seen Jaws on the big screen?
Yes, many times, actually, now. Okay. Though, since over the last few years, there's just been a number of there have been a number of opportunities for me to see the film, and I've seen it at multiple different theaters, and I've actually seen it once at the Movico when they first unleashed their the 4K restoration of
yeah.
it. I went to a screening of Movico there a few years back.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm actually in this weird place where I've actually seen Jaws. Probably as much as I've seen any other movie on the big screen at this point.
That's awesome.
So, the movie that changed summer box office forever.
I know,
really.
Completely. 1975 came out in June of 1975, and it changed everything. It really did. And then 2 years later, Star Wars came out, and so you know Spielberg and Lucas changed the whole face of commercial cinema at that point. Jaws. It's one of those movies, I saw it, I got to tell you, the first time I saw Jaws, I was 10, because it came out in 1975, so I'm 10. And I see it at the Gateway Theater. The Gateway Theater was on Lawrence near Central. It's now called the Copernicus Center. And that's where I saw all the big sort of like big movies were there on the Northwest side. If you were going to go see a movie on the Northwest side. And it was like the big, you know, big one. You go to the Gateway. The Exorcist played there. The Sting played there. It was like all the big movies played there. And I remember seeing Jaws for the first time, and I loved Quint so much that I wanted to put a toothpick in my mouth. And just walk around with a hat on. Robert Shaw in that movie is, I mean, everybody's unbelievable. Scheider rules, you know, Dreyfus rules, Lorraine Gary rules. Everybody rules in that movie. But Quint, man, I mean, come on. And that monologue. The Indianapolis, USS Indianapolis monologue, it's, in my opinion, perhaps the greatest monologue in the history of cinema. And delivered by a guy who was loaded.
Yeah.
He was
drunk.
He was loaded. And if you watch that, it's unbelievable. Because the take that Spielberg used, evidently there were two, they had two cameras set up. And Shaw was hammered. He'd been drinking. Like, I mean, Robert Shaw was a drunk.
Yeah.
And obviously, in real life, the relationship between him and Dreyfus was exactly the same as it was.
Yes.
On screen, he really treated Dreyfus like a jerk. But the take that Spielberg used was the take where, like, Shaw finished the monologue. This insane, brilliant, awesome, incredibly delivered monologue passed out right on the table.
Collapsed. Yeah. Got it out and bam, his head hit the table.
And it's legendary. It's absolutely legendary. So we will be watching that on the big screen as well as there's a shark in it too.
That's going to be a fun discussion Tuesday night. There are so many things to talk about.
Yeah, there is, man. I'm glad you guys are going to be there. All right, hang on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you guys. We're going to come back and review the new movies. And that's what we do on Monday mornings on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. It's Monday. And that means it's time for the movie reviews. We did the box office returns, and Colin Suter, Eric Childress join me every Monday morning here on 720 WGN. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. Your box office, San Andreas came in first with $53 million, followed by Pitch Perfect 2, Tomorrowland, Mad Max, Fury Road. More people should see that movie. The Avengers, Age of Ultron, Aloha, which opened very poorly. Poltergeist, Far From Madding Crowd, Hot Pursuit, and Home. And we talked about the box office, and now we're going to review the new movies. So we welcome Colin. Colin?
Hello.
And Eric. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
All right. Colin?
Yeah.
Hey, man. Tell us about San Andreas.
All right. Well, as we've been saying, this is the latest disaster movie, and it stars Dwayne The Rock Johnson as a fire department helicopter pilot specializing in rescue missions. His ex-wife is played by Carla Gugino.
And this is like their third movie together.
Is it?
Yeah.
I've been keeping track.
Yeah, it's like their third.
I thought that watching the movie, but I couldn't put my finger on what else.
She's in the other
together.
Journey movies.
That's right.
Oh. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, they have a daughter together, played by Alexandra Daddario. So it's your typical romantic subplot that's been borrowed from every other disaster film ever made. So she's his ex-wife. So on the other side of the story, completely unrelated, you have Paul Giamatti as a seismologist who's just designed a program that can help predict earthquakes. Problem is, it's about a week late. good God Almighty, the earthquake of earthquakes has just hit California and will probably take the whole country down with it. Everything on the West Coast is crumbling down, including, of course, the Golden Gate Bridge, which has got to be the most destroyed American landmark of all time. You can't make a disaster movie if you're not going to do the Golden Gate Bridge. Or a Planet of the Apes movie or any other kind of alien invasion.
Right.
Don't they destroy it in the third X-Men movie, too?
It is, yeah.
So Dwayne Johnson spends the movie rescuing his ex-wife from various tops of buildings and trying to find his daughter, who's running around with two English brothers, one of whom becomes a love interest for her.
By the way, that actress, I would like to mention, is very memorable in True Detective. That's
Alexandra Daddario.
Oh, yeah,
that's all.
Yeah, season one, yeah. Episode two.
Yeah, that's all. That's all.
Yep, about 20 minutes in.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep. What were we talking about again? Oh yeah, San Andreas. Yeah, it's easy to forget sometimes. all right, so this has basically all your disaster movie tropes, and not much else. It's a movie that basically exists to show you wide shots of things falling down and crumbling and making you wonder, wow, how did they do that? Well, it's just, you know, same way they've been doing all these other disaster movies. I think, you know, Dwayne The Rock Johnson is a good enough center for the movie. But and I think there are a few exciting moments, particularly the first disaster shot of Hoover Dam. I thought was pretty terrific. Problem is, I think the movie, like you said, Nick, it suffers in comparison to a lot of other things out there, not just Mad Max Fury Road, but like just a lot of other disaster movies that I've seen. I mean, I think that tornado movie, that stupid tornado movie from a couple years ago.
Into the Storm.
Into the Storm. Yeah. I like that one a little bit more. I thought that was trying for something a little bit different. This one doesn't really, it just seems a little bit lazy, but at the same time, it does provide some good eye candy. Now, I do think there's a problem with seeing it in 3D, which I did. Seeing it in 3D makes the movie look a little, makes the special effect look a little unfinished. It looks a little, you can see the, you can see the layers, you can see the cracks, and it just isn't all that convincing. Now that's in 3D. I don't know how it looks in 2D, but that's the review I'm giving for that. On the whole, though, I think this is a pretty forgettable movie with, you know, the few moments of eye candy that are interesting. But after a while, it just gets to be, it gets to be a bit much, almost like the director has, like, disaster fetish or something like that, and they can't get enough of, you know, seeing, you know, more buildings crumble or more, you know, you throw the tsunami in there. Now you got, you know, steamships crashing into buildings. And after a while, it just gets, you get into it, to the point where it's like, what am I supposed to be feeling here exactly? Am I, you know, am I supposed to be in awe of the disaster, or, you know, am I supposed to feel bad for everybody because there's a bad guy in the movie, or he becomes a bad guy, and we're supposed to sort of root for him getting a pile of concrete thrown onto him, you know, because of a bad decision that he made. And I just start to wonder, like, what exactly is the point of all this, besides, you know, making some money over the summer for the studio. So other than some, you know, exciting cliffhanger, you know, eye candy kind of moments, this is a pretty forgettable film.
Okay. All right. You guys hang on. We'll get Eric's opinion and my opinion of San Andreas, which is the new disaster movie featuring Dwayne The Rock Johnson and all kinds of stuff blowing up and crumbling and cracking and all kinds of stuff. And that'll be coming up right after we take a break here. It's Nick DiGilio. It's the Movie Reviews, 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, Monday morning, that means my dad tells the jokey time. Monday morning, Movie Reviews. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com join me every Monday for the movie reviews. And we're in the middle of reviewing San Andreas. Colin, Eric, welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
So Colin gave us his review. Eric, San Andreas.
Yeah, so I think I liked it a little bit more than Colin did, but not quite as much as you did, Nick.
Okay.
And here's why. When this film is sort of working in its element, and I saw the movie in 2D, so this is sort of answer Colin's 3D question as well.
Yeah.
When this movie is sort of is dealing with the special effects sequence, I think the film does a really good job. I think the special effects are really nicely handled in this film. They don't have that sort of that cheap quality of the CGI that we see. I think they do a really good job, and all the sequences involving the destruction I was into, simply because they managed to make it look as believable as possible, even if you're not really believing in the story at all. The problem with this film is that even with all the quote unquote excitement going on, or thrills that are going on with watching the world crumble apart, is that there really just isn't any genuine suspense in this film whatsoever. And one of the reasons for that is because they're really only sort of concentrating on like six main characters. Five or six of them are good, and another one, like Kyle mentioned, is a real D-bag. And who will get his just desserts later. And the thing is that they give you this sort of this really, really poorly placed backstory involving The Rock and his family, and they've already lost a daughter. So you're sort of all leading up to this moment that's in the trailers, by the way, this climactic moment where you just, even as suspenseful as it could possibly get at the end, and it's not very much, you just know that they're not going to sort of, you know, drop the hammer on this family again. So there's just, you don't really believe that anything bad is going to happen, at least to the main characters. And then walking out of the movie, I thought of that. It would have been nice to have like one scene where somebody from like the rescue headquarters like calls The Rock's character and goes, "Oh yeah, hey, shouldn't you be over here instead of looking for your family? Shouldn't you be trying to help somebody else out out of this mess?" I mean, I know he loses the helicopter pretty early, but still, it's just like it's been nice if someone tried to get in touch with. And then what happened to his partner? Like there's like three guys in the helicopter at the beginning of the movie. One guy hurts his arm. The other guy, you know, talks to him a little bit, and then he's gone. So I don't know, but you know, I walked out with this sort of this mixed kind of heavy heart to it. You know, just like I, you know, there was a good portion of it that I did manage to enjoy. The Rock is a very, you know, no pun intended, sturdy center for the movie. Watching Alexander Daddario is certainly very pleasurable. And I think she's actually pretty good here, too. The one sequence that I actually did like a lot is the sequence where she's trapped in the car.
Yeah.
And the way that the brothers managed to get her out. I thought that was actually the best sequence in the movie. And it's just, you know, three guys, you know, trying to not make a big rock fall on a car. But other than that, it's kind of a mixed bag. It's better than any of the Roland Emmerich disaster movies for certain. But still sort of a mixed negative on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also mixed on it, but I'm positive. I had a good time. I liked it. It's not smart. And there are certainly lots of flaws, and I agree with a lot of what both of you guys have said about the movie, that there is a lack of sort of human center in the film, for sure. But I think the effects are great, and I think they did a really great job with a lot of the action sequences in the movie and a lot of the big, crazy spectacle stuff in the film. And again, you know, Colin, like you were saying, it gets to the point where it just kind of doesn't stop.
Yeah.
And I, you know what? And I didn't bother me. So I actually enjoyed it. I think the Rock is a pretty good action hero guy. I think he's very solid, as you said. Again, we're using the word solid.
I know.
He's very solid in these kinds of movies. And you know, I mean, this is not a great movie, but I the effects are great, and the spectacle is what a lot of people are going to this movie to see, and I think they're going to get that. So,
and at the very least, the movie, you know, reconfirms the fact that if you're ever in a 9.5 earthquake, just get under a desk. You'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't hate it. I actually thought, you know, I mean, it's a recommendation, but not a great recommendation for San Andreas.
And, now, I guess the overall recommendation is if you're going to see it in 2D, because it doesn't look that good in 3D.
Yeah, I didn't see. I saw it in 2D. So, I don't know what it looked like in 3D. But, yeah.
It looks like a bad conversion.
I kind of, you know, prefer to see everything in 2D.
So do I.
So, you know, that's just my thing. So now I don't know. You guys are way too young to remember when Earthquake came out.
Yeah, I was not born yet.
Okay, Earthquake. What the hell year did Earthquake come out? I want to say
74, right?
74, maybe. Yeah, 74, 73. But my favorite thing about Earthquake, now Earthquake was one of those. Is it what year?
74.
74. Okay. My favorite thing about it. Is, I don't know if you guys have ever seen the poster art for Earthquake.
Yeah,
because it's like
them all hanging from the title, right?
Yeah, and it's like Earthquake. Now, but the tagline. Do you guys remember the tag? Have you seen the tagline for Earthquake? It's my favorite stupid tagline ever in movies.
No,
it just,
I don't remember it.
It just says an event. That's it, man. That's it. That Earthquake, an event.
Okay.
Yeah. I saw it at the Ford City Theater on the south side of Chicago. Earthquake. And I remember my dad was like, all right, this is a piece of crap. My dad went out and smoked like about 12 times during the movie. And theater's shaking, and I'm like, oh, sense around. It's awesome. And then plaster starts falling, and it's just – it was ridiculous. But, yeah, and Irwin Allen, man, that was the beginning. I think that was the first big one. I think that preceded
– Wait, when was Poseidon?
Was Poseidon before that?
I think Poseidon was 72, wasn't it?
Oh, okay. So, because you got
Towering
Poseidon,
Inferno,
you got
I think was 74 too.
You got Towering Inferno. You got Earthquake.
Yeah, Poseidon Adventure is 72.
Yeah, yeah, boy, Poseidon Adventure was good.
That's a good one.
Oh man, man, I love Gene Hackman in that movie. Oh my God. All right, almost as much as I love Robert Loggia. All right, we got a break. When we come back, we've got the new Cameron Crowe movie to review. You guys hang on, okay? All right. Colin and Eric are here. We've got Aloha to review coming up right here on 720 WGN. Stay tuned. Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Every Monday morning, we review the movies with Colin Suter and Eric Childress. We also take a look at the box office, which we did. And now we've got one more movie to review. Colin Suter, Eric Childress from eFilmCritic.com and RogerEbert.com. Welcome back, Colin and Eric.
Thank you.
Hello. All right, Eric, tell us about Aloha.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned, this is the latest film from Cameron Crowe. Stars Bradley Cooper as an ex-member of the military who is given up the military life after a really horrific experience in Afghanistan, and now works for the money side of the private contractors who work with the military as far as funding programs and missile launches and things like that. And he's working again for the biggest billionaire in the world at the moment, played by Bill Murray. And he's going down to Hawaii to basically get a blessing from this local tribe for this missile launch that Bill Murray's contractor wants to put into the sky. He knows the guys, knows the head of the tribe, and basically has to get their blessing because there are a lot of superstitions involved with, you know, putting anything in the sacred skies around this land. Then there are further complications. Emma Stone plays the Air Force fighter pilot who becomes the military liaison to Cooper's character, and she actually believes in a lot of these superstitions and likes to talk about them ad nauseum with Bradley Cooper's character, who is very jaded and doesn't really want to hear about these sorts of things. And also on the island is Rachel McAdams, who is his ex-girlfriend. And she is married now to John Krasinski's character, who is also on and off the island and is a pilot himself. And it's also you have sort of this kind of love triangle going on. It's not, you know, really sort of a really forced love triangle, clashing with this whole military subplot and superstitions and, you know, all these things that are going on with the tribe. And you have the second movie this week that gets some things right, but gets a few more things wrong. The things that I did like about the movie are the sort of the standard things that we come to expect in Cameron Crowe's movies. He has a way of bringing you into these relationships, and somehow, even as ridiculous and unbelievable some of these relationships might be, he has a way with words sometimes, and he has a way of pulling us into these storylines and these characters that seemed a lot less forced than a lot of other rom-com writers out there. And I think there are some really solid moments between Cooper and Stone, particularly when they first sort of realize that they have feelings for each other. I think there's a really wonderful moment there. And he also does a lot of the best moments in this film are actually done through silence. There's a really great bit, that recurring bit involving Cooper and Krasinski, involving how Krasinski is just not much of a communicator, not much of a talker, and they sort of have these alpha male moments between each other where only the two of them understand what each is saying to the other, and I think those moments work really well. And there's a final moment in the film that, even though the film doesn't really handle this particular subplot very well, there's a really wonderful moment at the end of the movie between Cooper and another character that's also, again, done without words. But then you have a screenplay that really is a bit of a mess. And even me trying to explain what this movie is about is not really going to do it justice, because it's kind of hard to explain precisely exactly everything that's going on. You sort of get the gist of what Crowe's going for with this sort of the magical realism of the superstition and, you know, what's going on, you know, with these this love triangle that's happening on the ground. But then you don't really expect, or you don't really want to see Cameron Crowe's version of real genius, which is what this movie sort of becomes. And it's really kind of unfortunate, because, there's a moment in the film where, Cooper basically has to inflict his will on what's going on with the Bill Murray's character. And he does it in a way that, it's Crowe's way of sort of bringing his nostalgia, Rolodex into the film, where it seems so out of place and weird. It makes the ending of Vanilla Sky look like, like a misremembered jingle. And so it's this really mixed bag it reminds you of the sort of the mess that was Elizabethtown. But I managed to watch that again this weekend, and I still find a lot of things really interesting about that movie, especially 10 years later. But this one is going to go down as sort of the weakest of Crowe's resume. But at the same time, I don't think it's nearly as bad as the reputation that Sony gave it leading up to its release, and the way critics have really sort of hammered this thing into the ground. It's not that bad. If people, we're not that far removed from a lot of really bad rom-coms. We never are. And here's one that is at least is an interesting failure to some extent, but, is still kind of a failure.
Okay. All right. Colin?
Yeah, I'm kind of right with Eric on this one. I think you can explain the movie to make it sound rather straightforward, because it really is like, it is a sort of love triangle. It's a guy, reconnecting with his ex-wife and, who's, moving on, and you kind of know where that's going to go. And so, there's this sort of weird, it's an odd little hybrid of things, spins a traditional rom-com with the traditional elements, but also weaving in this, like Eric said, real genius-like plot involving rockets and ulterior motives for having them, and a lot of stuff that I didn't quite get a handle on that. So the third act is kind of, I didn't feel, what any connection to any of that stuff. But it also, the first half, it delves into a lot of Hawaiian and astrological mythology that, keeps being brought up and keeps being talked about. There's there's a kid in the movie who keeps talking about the arrival and everything. And I kind of wish there was more of a follow-up with that in the last half and less of the rocket stuff. So it's just kind of a, like Eric said, it's kind of a weird, interesting failure. More of an interesting failure to me than We Brought a Zoo, which to me should have just been called We Brought a Zoo and everything turned out fine. Every problem we have was solved in 5 minutes, so nothing really happened. We bought a zoo and that was that. I kind of grew frustrated with that movie. This one, I was just kind of, it was more interesting to see him try to weave all these elements in that that don't quite mesh, but it's interesting to watch him try. Instead of setting his movie in Hawaii and, dealing with the military and it's just kind of seeing him try to break out of his comfort zone while still staying in his comfort zone of doing, his brand of dialogue, his brand of rom-com. That is definitely his brand that I think he shares with James L. Brooks. This is, like Eric said, this is an interesting failure. Not a bad movie though. Certainly the cast is likable, but even if it's really hard to buy Emma Stone as an Asian American, I think that's a Bonfire of the Vanities level of casting that might be talked about for a while. Just on a surface level, in the role itself, it's fine, but you got to take away that character element because it's kind of distracting. So, an interesting hybrid, weird kind of mess, but not unwatchable.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. I'll give you my review, and then we'll talk about what we're going to be talking about next week on the movie review segment here on 720 WGN. It's Nick DiGilio, 312-981-7200.
Hawks win!
Hawks win!
Hawks win!
The Hawks win!
Hawks win!
We'll talk about it!
Chicago's Conversation with Rokan this afternoon, beginning at 3 on 720 WGN.
I'm Jean Norris, and I am an executive board member for JDRF Illinois. JDRF's track record is one of the leading philanthropic organizations out there in terms of the percentage of dollars that go to the cure. And I encourage anyone to check it out and to make sure that wherever you're giving your dollars, that a majority is going to the cure. And JDRF is one of the top organizations in that area.
To find out more and donate, visit WGNradio.com/JDRF.
More with Colin and Eric coming up right here on 720 WGN. We're also going to do the Man versus Beast movies in honor of my screening of Jaws, which is happening on Tuesday night. Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder talk about being a kid adult at 10:35 this morning. Make sure you tune in for that. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. 3:30 right now. We got to get to the news, and with that is ABC News.
The National Security Agency's domestic surveillance program expired overnight after the Senate failed to pass an extension. Kentucky Senator and Republican presidential candidate Rand Paul vowed he would not let it be renewed. The NSA's collection of phone records halted for the moment. About 300 miles off the Oregon coast overnight, an underwater earthquake coming in at magnitude 5.8. No reports of injuries or damage on land. A second accuser in the sex scandal involving former House Speaker Dennis Hastert. Sources telling ABC News that accuser is a former student of Hastert, who was a teacher and coach at an Illinois high school for 16 years. A car crash last night at Los Angeles International Airport has left a 9-year-old girl in critical condition. Erin Kaiser says she saw the girl go flying.
She clearly hit her head. She was unconscious. Her eyes were rolled back in her head. Everybody was yelling for a doctor.
Investigators say it appears the driver, a 67-year-old man, mistook his gas pedal for the brake. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Tired of playing a 6-hour round of golf with overpriced fees? Take a short drive west to the course voted best in DeKalb County, the Sycamore Park District Golf Club. For less than $45 with a cart, you get a comfortable pace, bent grass fairways, and immaculate conditions. If you're a first-timer at our course, mention WGN Radio and you'll get an additional discount. Sycamore Park District Golf Club, the way golf was meant to be played. Find us at sycamoreparkgolf.com. Sycamore Park District. We put the more in Sycamore.
Are you tired of constantly hearing about absurd sales? Buy one, get two free? Well, how much is the first one? Installation only $1? What's the material cost? Hi, this is Tom Janke, a builder supply outlet. Instead of smoke and mirrors, I promise when you get your cabinets, doors, flooring, plumbing, and trim from us, you'll get honest value and outstanding customer service. Builder Supply Outlet has 4 lines of cabinetry, 8,000 interior and exterior doors, over 100,000 square feet of flooring, countless plumbing fixtures, and miles of trim, all at true outlet prices every day on every item. Come in for a free estimate with one of our product specialists or kitchen designers. They're the best in the business. Builder Supply Outlet, just 5 miles east of the Oakbrook Shopping Mall on Cermak Road in Broadview, or visit buildersupplyoutlet.com.
Quality and savings are what you get at Builder Supply Outlet.
From the WGN Weather Center, partly sunny until late afternoon and then clearing, high lower 60s inland, but only in the mid-50s near the lake. Tonight, clear, low mid-40s. Currently, it's cloudy and it's 49 at O'Hare, 50 at Midway. It's 49 in Park Ridge and 48 along the lakefront. A quiet morning on the area expressways. The Edens and Kennedy are problem-free, as is the Eisenhower, which is about a 29-minute ride from Thorndale into downtown. Stevenson also in good shape, just 24 between the Tri-State and Lakeshore Drive. The Dan Ryan continues to have road work at the locals between 51st and 31st on the inbound side. Two right lanes are closed until 5 this morning. Also, the two right lanes are closed as you approach downtown between 18th and the Byrne Interchange, and the 43rd Street entrance and exit ramps are closed until 5. Ford and 57 look good. The tollways and no problems in Northwest Indiana. Bill Cerrones, WGN Traffic Central.
Nick DiGilio here. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. And we're wrapping up the movie reviews here. Aloha is Cameron Crowe's new movie. Colin and Eric gave it their reviews, and they were mixed. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
yeah, I'm with you guys. I'm with you guys on this one. There are things about it that I liked and things about it that I didn't like. I Elizabethtown is the only movie that he's ever made that I sort of actively dislike. I have issues with Singles as well. But this one, I think it's better than Elizabethtown, but it's an absolute mess. There are things about it though that I did like. I thought some of the performances were really good. There was a good chemistry between some of the actors and actresses. And there is that thing that Cameron Crowe can do, where he can make. Cameron Crowe has this ability to make a scene that has no business working work. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like that, like for instance, I'll give you the quintessential scene, and it's the scene where everybody sings the Elton John song, Tiny Dancer, in Almost Famous on the bus. That scene has no business working. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like on paper, you're like, okay, this is the corniest thing in the history of anything. And yet it is fantastic and emotional and glorious in the movie. And Crowe has that sense, you know, he has that sense to do that. There are things in so many of his other movies that wouldn't work in the hand of any other director. I mean, you had me at hello? How the hell does that work? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So there are things in here that kind of, you know, come close to that mark, but just miss. I think Bradley Cooper's actually really good in it. I like Emma Stone in it a lot, and I think they have some really great moments together. It's a terrific cast. You know, you can't argue with the people that are in this movie. You guys didn't mention Alec Baldwin. Alec Baldwin, who I think is actually hilarious in the movie.
I think he actually plays the same character he did in Elizabethtown, though. He's just been promoted.
Well, you know what? That might be true. But I think Alec Baldwin's pretty hilarious in the movie. But it doesn't soar. It doesn't work. It's not the kind of Cameron Crowe movie that I really like. And like you, Eric, I'm a fan of the damn Zoo movie.
Yeah, I am.
I really like that movie, and I think you want to talk about a scene that has no business working. The final scene?
Final scene is beautiful.
In We Bought a Zoo is unbelievable. It's just amazing. And the fact that, Crow pulled that off, but he never reaches that kind of...
The guy has a knack for endings.
Yes, he does.
You think about Say Anything, you think about Almost Famous, yeah. You know, you think about, I mean, Jerry Maguire, and, you know, we bought a zoo. The ending to this movie, I think, is really kind of beautiful.
Yeah, it is. The ending of this movie is pretty great, yeah.
But.
So, yeah. But doesn't work. All right, so San Andreas and Aloha. Yeah, not a good weekend.
You could do better, you could do worse.
You could do better, you could do worse, exactly. All right, Eric, what do we got next week?
Well, speaking of which, on Wednesday, Entourage opens.
Oh, boy.
So if you want to get a jump start of the weekend, you got that on Wednesday. But if you can hold out to the weekend, you got Spy, the new Paul Feig movie with Melissa McCarthy, and you have Insidious Chapter 3.
Now, you've seen Spy.
Yes.
Yeah, and you saw, where did you see it? Sundance?
South by.
Oh, South by. Okay.
Yeah.
So the review, I remember you said it was good.
Mm-hmm.
But you said that it was the first time that you ever wanted more Statham.
Yes. The first time I could actively say that at the end of the movie, I said that movie needed more Jason Statham. And I stand by that.
Okay, I understand that, but that's a sentence that I don't know would come out of anybody's mouth.
Right. Until you see this movie.
Until you see Spy. Okay, so Spy opens, and that's Melissa McCarthy's wacky comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Insidious Chapter 3. Now, who directed this one? I don't even know.
Lee Whannell.
What the hell?
His co-writer on Saw.
Oh, co-writer
James
on Saw.
Lon's call, yeah.
Okay, all right.
And he wrote the other Insidious movies, too.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. So Insidious Chapter 3. Now, this is from what I understand, this is a prequel, correct?
I don't know where it takes place, but it doesn't have Patrick Wilson and Rose Byrne in it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I don't.
It has the Ghost Hunters in it, but not the principal player.
And it's got what's her name? From There's Something About Mary.
Lin Shaye.
Yeah, Lin Shaye, who's hilarious.
She was in the other ones too.
Oh, she? Yeah, okay. I don't even remember, man. Yeah. I can't tell between Insidious and what the hell. I mean, I don't even know anymore at this point.
With Conjuring, these, Poltergeist.
Yeah, Conjuring. I don't know what the hell's good. Well, The Conjuring was good.
Conjuring's good.
But that damn, what was the puppet one? Annabelle.
Annabelle.
Oh, yeah. God.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Oh, God. All right. All right, well, okay, so we got Entourage. Spy and Insidious Chapter 3, those are the big ones coming up.
Yeah.
And so there you go. All right, guys, thanks so much.
Yeah.
Alrighty. I appreciate it, and we'll do it again next week.
Sounds good.
All right. Okay, guys, take care.
Later.
All right, there's Colin, there's Eric, and we'll do the box office again next week and all the movie reviews coming up. And that's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. Stay tuned.